Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Devil's Playground by Charlie Cox, narrated by Kate Zane. Chapter 1. Thursday, April 22nd. Huddled inside the cramped, darkened closet with her arms tightly wrapped around the children, London Brecken rocked the two of them back and forth, shushing them as quietly as she dared, while urging them to cover their ears with their hands to tune out the muffled screams coming from their mother's bedroom. Abigail, who'd recently turned 3 years old, crawled up into London's lap and pressed her wet face into London's neck.
"I want my mommy!"
Hiccups punctuated each word and sliced London's heart into ribbons. Battling to keep her own terror at bay, she squeezed Abigail tighter against her. How had a fun night in with her two best friends turned into the opening scene of a horror film? Half an hour earlier, both she and her friend Elena, who'd arrived late to the party as usual, had been watching on with love and amusement as Abigail and her 6-year-old brother Carter wheedled 5 more minutes out of their mother. And when Skye had finally put her foot down and ushered them off to bed, they'd begged London to read them a story. They'd been giggling at her Tigger and Eeyore voices when they'd heard the knock. Knowing either Elena or Skye would get it, London had continued reading even when the front door slammed with a deafening boom, chuckling along with Carter and Abigail because they'd all jumped at the sound. Seconds later, their laughter had cut off as abruptly as Elena's sudden, terrified scream. All three of them froze as, slowly, London sat up. Without thinking about what she was doing, she lifted Abigail so she could move her to the other side of the bed, farther away from the door and closer to her brother. Then three things happened simultaneously. The unoiled patio door off Skye's room screeched open. Skye cried out, "What do you want?" And thundering footsteps raced from the living room down the hall. Filled with pain, Skye's next scream caused arctic fingers of dread to prickle along London's spine. Something or someone fell outside the room, and the sounds of a scuffle, along with Skye's muffled, terror-filled grunts, reached through the walls. London couldn't be sure, but she'd watched enough scary movies to guess her friend had tried unsuccessfully to escape and was being dragged back into her room. Behind her, the bed squeaked, startling a gasp out of London, and she whirled around, half expecting to see another intruder coming in through the window, only to see something slightly less terrifying, Carter flying across the room toward the door. Barely grasping his arm before he could wrench it open, London willed her heart to slow before dizziness overtook her. Gently but firmly, she placed her hand over Carter's mouth and pulled him back with her until the three of them were flush against the wall, partly hidden by a dresser. Driven now by only one instinct, to shield and protect the children from whatever was happening outside the room, London found herself operating on autopilot as she lowered herself in front of the kids and placed a finger against her lips. Pointing, she directed them to the closet. Carter's wide eyes darted to the door, over to the closet, then back to his sister and London, making the full circuit twice before blessedly obeying her silent instructions. When Abigail's quaking form seemed unable to move, London picked her up and placed her beside her brother. Before closing the three of them inside, she hurried back across the room, grabbing the extra blanket off the foot of the bed, and snatching up Abigail's favorite stuffed animal, an orange hippo she'd named Mr. Orange, and then she switched off the bedside lamp. Doing her best to tune out Skye's horrified whimpers, London squeezed herself into the cramped space and closed the door. With Abigail under one arm and Carter under the other, she whispered assurances that they would be okay, that she would protect them. From whom, she did not know. All she knew was she could hear two voices, neither of them belonging to her friends, and neither that she recognized. Slowly, She removed her arm from around Carter, who pressed himself closer to her side at the abandonment. Reaching into her pocket for her phone, she cursed softly when she realized she'd left it out in the living room. Tears that had been steadily building finally spilled over, splattering onto her arm. Her mind whirling with a kaleidoscope of alternative ideas, London stifled the need to scream when each one presented too high a risk of getting caught. If it had only been her, she might have tried. But with Carter and Abigail's lives at stake, she finally had to concede that without a way to call the police, their best option was to pray she and the kids would remain undetected while they waited for the intruders to get what they came for and leave. Still, with each tormented sound of torture that worked its way into the room, guilt threatened to consume her. The rational part of her brain insisted that staying put to protect the children was the right thing to do. The other part called her selfish and spineless for cowering in the closet. Without a watch or phone to tell her how long the nightmare dragged on, each second blurred into one ceaseless stream of muffled cries and hoarse screams, until silence, swift and sudden, crashed around them. Blood pulsing loudly in her ears, London gathered Carter and Abigail's trembling forms even tighter against her and forced herself to remain still. A near impossibility when footsteps moved from Skye's bedroom and paused outside their room.
Please, please don't come in here.
All she had to protect the three of them were plastic hangers. A dizzying sense of relief swooshed through her when the footsteps moved on. The vibration of Abigail's frantic heartbeat against London's own chest helped her focus on taking deep, quiet breaths, as she waited to see if the stillness would last, if the intruders had left. When an entire eternity passed without sound, she slowly and carefully scooted Abigail off her lap to sit beside Carter, who immediately tucked his little arm protectively around his sister. Leaning in close, London whispered, "I need you to both stay here while I go grab my phone. Do you understand?"
"No, I don't want you to go."
Carter's small fingers bit into London's wrist.
"Please don't leave us in here."
The pressure in London's chest felt like it might actually explode outward.
"I know, sweetie, and I don't want to either. But I have to. I promise I'll hurry."
In the dark, she pressed a finger against his lips to silence his next protest.
"I know you're scared, but I have to get my phone so I can call for help. So, no matter what you hear, I need you and Abigail to stay absolutely quiet and wait for me to come back. Do you understand?"
Two little hands touched either side of London's cheeks as Carter brought her head closer to his mouth so he could whisper into her ear.
How will we know if it's you?"
London closed her damp eyes against the fear and confusion in Carter's voice.
"Do you remember when your mom taught you never to trust strangers who pretended to know you? She said anyone who was supposed to pick you up would know the secret password. Are you my mother?"
A tight fist squeezed her heart, remembering how Skye had thought it so adorable when Carter mispronounced the popular P.D. Eastman title.
"So how about I whisper that when I come back in the room before I open the closet? That way you'll know it's me, okay?"
"Promise you'll hurry."
Even as the promise slipped past her lips, London's stomach soured at the thought of facing the sobering task in front of her.
"I'll hurry back, promise."
Before she stood, she planted a kiss on top of both Carter and Abigail's heads. Then, pushing to her feet, she winced when her knee popped loudly. Sweaty hand hovering over the doorknob, she sucked in a deep breath and let it out before opening the closet and stepping into the slightly less dark room. Pressing the heel of her hand into her chest in a feeble attempt to still the pounding inside, She moved over to the door where her breathing hammered in and out so fast she feared she'd either hyperventilate or pass out. She counted slowly to 10 three times before she finally trusted herself to face whatever awaited her on the other side. At a snail's pace, she twisted the doorknob and edged the door open until the slightest bit of light could be seen through the crack. Inch by inch, she slid it further until she could squeeze through. Closing the door softly behind her, she listened for the faint click as it latched, and then she leaned back against the wall, fighting against the clawing need to return to the closet and the kids. A strange odor drifted her way, and instinct had her turning her head even while her subconscious told her to resist. She covered her mouth against the scream that threatened to burst from her at the sight of a blood trail leading from the hallway into Skye's room. For a precious second, London vacillated, torn between checking on Skye and going for her phone. Carter's whispered, "Promise you'll hurry," reminded her she didn't really have a choice. The police would know how to help her friend, and right now the children were her main priority. Swallowing against the terror threatening to hold her immobile, she held her breath against the smells as she tiptoed toward the living room. She couldn't stop the small, mewling sound that escaped when she spotted a spreading pool of thick blood trailing across the tile floor until it reached the edge of the carpet. London's eyes followed it back up until they landed on her friend, lying on the floor, her dead stare locked on nothing, and her mouth frozen open on a terrified O. She had to move past Elena to get to her phone. Crying, gagging, she forced her feet forward, reminding herself with each step that Carter and Abigail were alone and waiting on her. Just as her shaking hand reached her phone and snatched it to her chest, a loud thud coming from behind her froze London in place. Her first thought was Carter, and her head swiveled to the hallway, relieved he hadn't disobeyed and followed her out after all. But that meant someone was still inside somewhere. In her peripheral vision, a shadow moved, and she whirled around. Cold, murderous eyes stared back at her from beneath a dark, hooded cloak. Even as London's brain screamed at her to run, she stood cemented in place. She opened her mouth to yell for help, but snapped it closed for fear that Carter would come running. Her mind screeching at her to get away, to draw the danger away from the children, London took a careful step back, and then another. If she could get to the kitchen, she could flee through the back door and scream until someone called for help or came to their rescue. But as she took a third step, she slammed into someone else. A small squeak escaped before her neck was wrenched back and a hand clapped over her mouth. The sharp, burning sting of a knife plunging into her side ripped away her ability to breathe. As the intruders propelled her down the hall, one of them tore her phone from her hand. Desperation clawing at her insides, her lungs bursting for air, London allowed herself to be dragged away, praying Carter wouldn't hear the commotion and come investigating on his own to see what was taking her so long. And then every thought scattered as the knife sank deeply into the soft swell of her stomach, causing her to cry out in unimaginable pain. Chapter 2. Thursday, April 22nd. The gruesome odor of death and the overpowering, sickening scent of escaped bodily fluid saturating the heavy air inside the house on Greenwood Avenue stung at Detective Alyssa Wyatt's eyes. Wrinkling her nose and breathing only through her mouth, she stepped to the side to allow the videographer to continue recording the crime scene. From information the first responding officer had obtained, it was believed that a single mother of two lived in the home. A laundry basket of toy cars, trains, blocks, and dolls tucked into a corner of the living area told Alyssa the children were young. A a fact that chilled her blood as she studied the butchery surrounding her. Despite her 20-plus years in law enforcement, she'd never been able to successfully harden herself against some of the atrocious, heinous things that humans inflicted upon one another. In fact, some of those things still haunted her dreams and had her waking in a cold sweat to check on her family. So, though never an easy task, Alyssa knew that forcing herself to think the way a killer might remained one of the things that made her so effective at her job. Which was why, at almost 11 o'clock on a Thursday night, she stood just inside the doorway of this home, trying to weave together what had happened. Tuning out the voices of emergency personnel all around her, she concentrated on the initial trail of evidence. Victim number one's body, a young woman, possibly in her early to mid-20s, lay in the front foyer between the kitchen and living room, her face forever frozen in a mask of confusion, and her mouth opened in a terrified scream, a sound likely cut off when the woman's throat had been slashed nearly ear to ear. Long, smeared streaks of blood along the floor indicated she'd been dragged away from the door, which showed no signs of a forced entry, and led Alyssa to consider that the woman had known her attacker and allowed him inside before being overpowered. The why and who would be something she and her team would have to unravel. On the counter dividing the kitchen and the living area, two wine glasses, one drained with just a few drops of what was probably a rosé, if the nearby open bottle was any indicator, and the other tipped over on the beige carpet, joined an apparently untouched glass of an amber-colored liquid. A bottle of Jack Daniels rested next to the glass, which contained no lip or finger smudges, or any other telltale marks that might indicate the person had had a chance to partake of the poured drink. Spread out near the wine glasses were an array of chips, salsa, and guacamole, now a grotesque, congealed brown. A green chili dip still in its container, a ruffled chip forgotten in the center, perched precariously close to the edge of the counter, and held what Alyssa guessed were most likely drops of blood. A shudder rippled along her shoulders at the sight. Since the one-story house boasted an open floor plan, Alyssa could see both the kitchen and the living area from where she stood. A television mounted on the wall played Pandora in the background. She let her eyes rove the room, drifting upwards toward the ceiling and down along the floorboards and everywhere in between. Framed children's drawings, along with a mix of well-worn contemporary faux leather furniture and scratched, mismatched end tables laden with DVDs of several children's animated movies, provided a mental picture of a home filled with love and joy, not the murderous scene before her. Though the first responding officers had only discovered two adult victims, Alyssa's spine prickled with a sense of dread as she struggled not to allow her mind to jump to the horrifying conclusion that the children might have witnessed the crime before being taken by a monster capable of such savagery. She tried to remind herself that it was entirely plausible that the children who lived there had not been home at all. She forced herself to stay focused. Letting her mind wander to what-ifs could potentially cause her to overlook crucial details. Traversing the crime markers dotting the floor, Alyssa continued her perusal of the scene by following the faint bloody shoe prints leading from the living room down the hallway. An open door showed a bedroom with a travel bag on the bed. Just past the first room was the master bedroom where, from the looks of it, the worst of the carnage had taken place. On the wall, the perpetrator had hastily scrawled what appeared to be three-letter Fs, presumably using the blood of the second victim, who lay sprawled on the bed, her body far more brutalized than the one in the foyer. Fragments of hair, blood splatter, and skin tissue painted every surface from the headboard to the ceiling, and even a fake plant sitting in the corner. The utter brutality on display, led Alyssa to consider this victim to be the true target, with the first victim representing a horrible case of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. If she and her team could confirm that, they'd probably have the motive, which might lead them to the identity of the killer. Victim number two's skirt had been torn from her body, and the ragged fabric now lay against her neck. From the grooved red line stretching across her face, or what was left of it, Alyssa guessed the skirt had been used as a gag. In its place now was a black fabric rose that had been shoved inside the woman's mouth. Along with the violent stab wounds on her face that had clearly ruptured the globe of one of her eyes, the woman's chest was a tattered mess of flesh and cloth. In fact, the only part of her upper body seemingly left intact was her right cheek, presumably so her assailant could carve what appeared to be a crude, dagger-like object into it. Alyssa glanced back to the letters scrawled on the wall, wondering what significance the initials held. If nothing else, the scene inside this room made one thing abundantly clear. The person she was searching for harbored a brutal amount of no longer bottled up hatred and rage. On the nightstand near the door, a framed photograph lay face up, the glass cracked. A smiling woman in her late 20s knelt with one arm secured around a giggling little boy while cradling a toddler on her hip. Alyssa glanced from the picture to the woman on the bed. The victim's hair was longer, but even with the damage to her face, Alyssa was fairly certain the woman in the frame and the victim on the bed were one and the same. Once again, her thoughts raced to the children, and the hope and prayer that they had not borne witness to their mother's violent death.
What the?
Alyssa's partner of 7 years, Cord Roberts, came up beside her just as she stepped further inside the room, paying careful attention to where her feet landed to avoid unnecessary contamination of the crime scene. Like her, he'd been subjected to witnessing some of humanity at its worst, so Cord's shocked reaction spoke volumes about the intensity and violence of what had taken place inside this house. She didn't have time to respond because another one of their teammates was not so quietly making his way in their direction.
Jesus, God and Mother Mary, Officer Joseph Rowe swore loudly as he maneuvered past evidence techs crowding the area.
Just so you know, the medical examiner just arrived on scene.
Still standing in the doorway of the bedroom, Joe angled his head back toward the living room.
Can't someone turn that crap off?
The crap he was referring to was the classical melody drifting down the hallway from the Pandora app on the television in the living room.
That shit... stuff... doesn't fit with this bloody-ass scene. It's giving me the freaking heebie-jeebies.
Despite the seriousness of what they were dealing with, Alyssa and Cord shared a quick grin with Officer Tony White, Joe's partner and best friend, who was mere steps behind him. For the past month, Joe had been doing his utmost to clean up his language since his 2-year-old daughter, Haley, had begun gleefully repeating everything he said, taking a special amount of joy in reciting his swear words over and over while following him around the house. To date, no amount of sugar, her current kryptonite, worked as a bribe to get her to stop. Both Joe and his wife were torn between amusement and frustration. Joe turned what could either be a scowl or a twisted smile on Cord.
Go ahead, ham it up now. But when it's your turn, guess who'll be the one laughing? And you'll have twice the trouble.
He was, of course, referring to Cord and his wife, Sarah's, now 16-month-old twins, Shelley, named after his sister, and Shane. But ribbing each other would have to wait, because right now Alyssa needed her team and everyone on site to focus on what was right in front of them. The videographer lifted his hand to grab her attention.
Done in here, Liz. I'm going to hit that last room, and I should be finished up. I'll download the video and email it to you right away.
Thanks, Fernando. I appreciate it. And she did. Extremely thorough to the point of fanaticism, Fernando made certain he recorded every square inch of a crime scene from the baseboards to the ceiling and everything in between, in case there was something that seemed unimportant in the here and now, but might prove to be a crucial piece of evidence down the road. Alyssa had been pleased when she'd arrived tonight to find him already beginning the policy-mandated process. With so many officers traipsing through, it was inevitable they'd inadvertently contribute their own DNA, so a recording of the scene, aside from their lapel cameras, remained a crucial piece of any investigation. She just stepped closer to the bed when Fernando's startled yelp stole her attention. With Cord, Joe, and Tony fast on her heels, she bolted out the door and across the hall. It took her brain a second to catch up to what her eyes were seeing because it simply made no sense. Huddled against the wall inside the open closet door, the dark-haired little boy from the photograph, who couldn't be older than 5 or 6, had his right arm draped protectively around the shoulders of the young girl from the photo, and whose red, swollen face, wide eyes, trembling lips, and quaking form threatened to shatter Alyssa's composure. Especially when she spotted the little boy's left hand gripping the end of the monster's ink blanket as he tried to wrap it even tighter around their bodies, as if he could hide them from the adults in the room. The irony of a blanket full of monsters symbolically protecting the children wasn't lost on her. Acid pooled in her stomach as the coffee she'd gulped down on her way to the scene burned a path back up her esophagus. Filled with dread that the children might have witnessed the massacre that had taken place mere steps outside this room, Alyssa's heart didn't just skip a beat. It nearly stuttered to a standstill. At the same time, she was overcome with a sudden, profound sense of relief that the children were alive and that she didn't have to worry that they'd been kidnapped by the murderer. A million questions demanding immediate answers churned as her mind tried to conjure up a killer capable of producing the vast amount of carnage in other parts of the house, yet conscientious enough to spare 2 small children. It didn't quite add up, or really even seem likely. Neither did it seem likely or logical that 2 small children could miraculously hide throughout the entire ordeal. Not even an hour in, and this case had already taken a puzzling and disturbing turn. Her gaze still trained on the children, Alyssa listened as Fernando, who had never stopped recording, explained what had happened.
"I heard a noise and opened the closet thinking, I don't know what I was thinking. I guess that maybe we had another..."
Alyssa's hand shot out, stopping Fernando from finishing that sentence. Even if the children didn't understand what victim meant, she didn't want them hearing the word. For a fraction of a second, her mind flashed to the 3 glasses in the kitchen, but she pushed that aside as she stepped closer to the children. When tremors rocked the little boy with such fervor that the blanket fell, she immediately halted. With a rush of fury and sadness sweeping through her, she still somehow managed to speak softly. "My name is Detective Alyssa Wyatt. I'm a police officer. You're safe now. You're going to be okay. No one here will hurt you. Do you understand?" The little girl glanced up at her brother. But aside from his blink, he gave no indication as to what kind of fear and confusion had to be swirling through his terrified mind. She tried again. "Can you tell me your names?" Nothing. Without taking her eyes off the terrified children, Alyssa ordered Joe to grab the paramedics. Letting her own maternal instincts sneak through to guide her, she addressed the little boy once again. "I'm going to have someone come in here and take a look at the 2 of you, just to make sure you're not hurt, okay? Is that your little sister?" Still nothing. Perhaps, despite her best efforts, her face still displayed the horror of finding the children inside a house full of violence. Cord, standing beside her, whispered, "Let me try." Alyssa nodded. Among a trillion other things, the man seemed to be gold medal level at. Speaking to children ranked high on his list of attributes. Moving slightly in front of her, he crouched down until he reached eye level with the boy, whose scared eyes darted everywhere around the room at once, almost as if he were searching for...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?